welcome to the first ever edition of AL.com's Flick Fix. Is that right? Flick Fix?
Yeah, Flick okay. Fix.
Flick Fix.
That's what we're going with.
All right. I am your host, Francesca Scalisi, and with me are Ben Flanagan and Matt Scalisi. We're here to give you the lowdown on the new and noteworthy films playing in our local theaters, the DVDs coming out this week, and our recommendations in both fields. Just so you know, all movies we discuss are in wide release, unless otherwise noted. Let's start with Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. This movie's been in limited release since Christmas, and it's opening here this weekend. Ben, is this one worth watching?
Well, I haven't seen it, so I don't know if it's worth watching or not, but based on the trailer, I'm not exactly interested in it because I'm not the biggest fan of hyper-precocious child actors that you see these days in movies. I just think that these incredibly forced... yeah, well, we can get punny if we want to, but just these incredibly forced and just sort of frighteningly manufactured child actors just kind of give me an icky feeling. It's kind of like watching the Tierra show that you see on like the Learning Channel or whatever. Remind me the name of that show.
Oh, that was like, and Tierras.
Right. It's like,
wasn't this kid plucked from obscurity? He was like a Jeopardy contestant. He's not a kid actor. Which, I mean, I guess would still make you precocious.
Yeah, that might be true, but it's just the vibe I get from the trailer it's not really selling me. I mean, if you just told me that it was a Stephen Daldry-directed drama starring Tom Hanks and Sandra Bullock, and it was about 9/11, then sure, I'd be sold on that sentence. But once I saw this trailer and the fact that this kid is very talky throughout the entire thing and overly dramatic and slightly melodramatic, and somebody I know referred to this as, and I'm not using this term, this wasn't one I coined, but it got me thinking, they called it terrorist porn, because it's about 9/11 and remembering a figure or a character in the story fondly, obviously, and with great sadness, and it's played by one of the biggest movie stars on the planet, and so that might give people responsible for it some sort of vindication, like, hey, we got one of the biggest movie stars on the planet, let's feel slightly good about ourselves. And it just kind of gives me a raw feeling all over, and I doubt that's the vibe of the entire movie. I know it's supposed to be pretty uplifting and heartwarming, it's supposed to tell a really nice tale about this family, but I can't say I'm excited about it. And I'm not surprised, honestly, that critics have responded to it negatively and that it's not receiving this awards attention that it thought it might was going to heading into the season.
Well, to me, it always seems a little gross because it's, you know, a 9/11 movie, but it's, like, filled with quirky characters. And it's like a little, you know, adventure quest kind of thing. And it just kind of, the two things do not seem like they should go together. And maybe it works better as a novel. That's what it started as.
Yeah, but it's...
In a movie, it just feels like it's, like,
Oscar bait, you know?
Well, yeah, but also, like, trying to make cute of something that's not cute at all.
Yeah, Ben, I want to thank you for endearing our new listeners to us so quickly by using the phrase terrorist porn in the first 5 minutes of our new podcast.
I calls them like I see them, man.
Keep them coming back. We'll keep them coming back. Matt, do you have any feelings about this film?
No, I think I share the feelings you guys seem to be having about it. I just, you know, I think there's obviously a lot of promising, you know, impressive people involved. It just looks kind of like a big ball of sappy, you know, melodramatic hooks. And, you know, I don't know. I don't think I'd be opposed to seeing it, but I don't have very high expectations for it.
Well, you'll be seeing it by yourself if you go see it. All right, next let's talk about Red Tails, or as it's known in this state, the movie that won the championship. Matt Scalisi. Would you have seen this movie if it were not for of such football-y significance?
I'll be honest, I probably wouldn't have. And
and now we can't keep you away from the theater.
I said the day after the national championship game that I think George Lucas might be forgiven all of his cinematic sins by the Alabama nation after he sort of helped inspire Alabama to the BCS title with this movie. But, you know, I am really, as a sports journalist, I'm interested to see this movie because I've heard, for one thing, that Nick Saban lifted his halftime speech at the game directly from this movie, from a monologue. So there's that part of me that's interested in it. But, I mean, the special effects look really impressive. And, you know, Ben, you can probably speak more to this than me, but I know ILM was involved, obviously, and George Lucas's, you know, company did a lot of this. But was there not some involvement from Peter Jackson and the New Zealand special effects folks in this movie as well?
I don't know. I would assume ILM was responsible for most of, if not 100% of the effects. So that could be true, but I'm not sure.
But it looks like some cool action, and it's a good cast.
Tell me a little bit about what this movie is about, because I don't know anything about it.
Ben, you wrote the story on this for AL.com. Help us out a little.
Well, I think that it's basically just about the Tuskegee Airmen. I mean, this crew of African American pilots who essentially got this program off of the ground and the obstacles that they face in terms of prejudice and obviously wartime conflicts. And it's about them finally getting into the air and going on some missions during World War II and finally feeling like they serve a purpose and like they're serving their country and their military instead of just flying these routine training exercises. So I will say, I mean, other than the fact that it obviously gave the Tide all the motivation it needed to win the national championship last week, I will say that I was interested in this movie before that whole story broke out, just because it was a project that I'd heard about for so many years, honestly, for part of a couple of decades. And I think George Lucas has mentioned that he's tried to get this movie made for more than 20 years. And that doesn't surprise me because, like I said, I'd heard of it. And while there was a Tuskegee Airmen movie that was made for HBO part of 15 to 20 years ago, starring Lawrence Fishburne and Cuba Gooding Jr., actually, who's also in this, there's nothing wrong with making another Tuskegee Airmen movie if it's going to, first of all, enlighten some people and introduce them to the history of the Tuskegee Airmen, no matter how hokey or action-packed it might be, but also to give you a really action-packed, awesome war movie. And honestly, I was slightly skeptical about it before I saw a trailer, but once I saw that trailer, it just looked like a lot of fun. I mean, like Matt said, it looks like it has a lot of great special effects in terms of these airplane battles that you get. And honestly, if George Lucas is involved and is essentially financing the entire project, you're going to get the best special effects money can buy. So I got to say, I'm pretty excited about it. I just think it looks like a really awesome action movie.
I have this theory, though, that George Lucas strategically planned the showing of the movie to ensure that everyone in the state of Alabama would be at least aware of this movie. Well, I think it was a smart move on his part.
He only had a 50-50 shot of that gamble working out, though, because if Alabama comes out flat and loses that game, then what does it say about the movie?
Well, I think the film has a slight advantage with the state of Alabama sort of going into it because it's about Tuskegee, and it has that it has that draw, and there's a great sense of history, I think, in the state. And there's, you know, there's a pretty large sect of people who are very aware of Tuskegee and would be happy to go check it out and see a movie about it.
I'm not saying it's unworthy. I'm just saying it's a January movie. I didn't know anything about it. I live in Alabama, you know, but now I know about it.
Well, look at the cast, sir. I mean, look at the cast. You've got Cuba Gooding Jr., who hopefully will do good work again after what feels like a long drought. I mean, he's had a few things here and there. But you've got Terrence Howard, Bryan Cranston as this evil, racist military man who wants nothing more than the Tuskegee program to be shut down, obviously. So I'm sure he gets to do some really fun, evil, hokey stuff. So I think it looks, like I said, it looks like a lot of fun. I mean, I don't know that I'm going to see it in the theater, but it looks like one that I would either see in the theater or definitely check out on Blu-ray.
All right. Well, so then we've got Haywire, which Steven Soderbergh continues his inscrutable career with this movie. It stars a mixed martial arts fighter, I believe, and it was born out of just he saw her and was impressed with her. Is that right, Ben?
Yeah, I actually read an interview with him that people should check out if they're big fans of Steven Soderbergh. It's on the AVClub.com. Scott Tobias interviews Steven Soderbergh one-on-one, and they talk about how he did sort of pluck her not out of obscurity, because if anybody's familiar with female MMA, then I'm sure they know who Gina Carano is. But he said he was just flipping the dial, or turning the dial, I guess, on TV, and he just happened to come upon a fight and saw her in action and do an interview or something after the fight, and said he was intrigued by her, and he just wanted to make a badass action, 70s-style action movie with a woman in the lead role, and with a woman doing everything that you've seen men do in action movies over the years. And he seemed pretty amped about it, and he seems pretty psyched about what Gina Carano did during production. I mean, you just got a wicked cast of people here, just going down the list, and I don't want to exclude Channing Tatum, but I'm tempted to. But you have Ewan McGregor and Antonio Banderas, Michael Fassbender, and Michael Douglas. Yeah, seriously, so many people. But honestly, the draw here for me is Steven Soderbergh. I mean, this guy claims that he is on the verge of retirement here with just a handful of movies coming out within the next couple of years. So we better watch him while we can. But other than it just being a Soderbergh movie, it looks just kind of badass. I have to say, I'm really excited about it.
Well, you know, he's fun. He's such a funny character because he's like the anti-auteur. Like, I have no idea. You just never know what his movie's going to be. Which, like, I mean, he's out there and doing it, and it's good, but, like, it's just every single one is just a completely different experience.
You can't put your finger on what Soderbergh's thing is, yeah.
Yeah. Including, you know, this movie, the male stripper one he's making after that, and then what's the other one he's making this year? Or that he's made, I guess.
Well, he has an untitled suspense thriller of some kind coming out very soon.
He's also making the Liberace movie.
That's
with Michael
Douglas.
That's
the one I was thinking of. Yeah. So is this worth seeing, you think? You seem excited about it.
Oh yeah, I really do think so. I mean, if there's someone out there who can make both these indie brain teasers and mainstream fare, it's Steven Soderbergh. He can combine the two. Actually, I think he got a great example of that last fall with Contagion, which is one of my favorite movies of 2011. He's just a guy who won't really ask you to check your brain at the door, no matter if he's making an action movie or a heist movie or a movie that's about a lot of people talking. And the guy does it with such visual flair. He's obviously having a lot of fun with his actors and with the photography in his films. They always look great and sound great. And yeah, I agree that you never really know what he's going to do next. But I think while you're watching a Steven Soderbergh movie, it always feels like a Steven Soderbergh movie. And it's really difficult to sort of pinpoint what it is exactly he does and to define this style he obviously has. But he definitely has something. And Matt, I don't know if you're familiar with, I mean, I know you've probably seen the movie The Limey.
No, actually, I have not been.
Well, something that I'll recommend here, it's a really interesting little subplot behind the scenes here. This movie's written by a guy named Lim Dobbs, who is a veteran screenwriter who has worked with Soderbergh two times before on a movie called Kafka with Jeremy Irons, and then on The Limey, this movie that came out in the late 90s with Terrence Stamp. And there's a very famous DVD commentary. I mean, if you look up, like, you know, top DVD commentaries, I'm sure it's at the top of a lot of people's lists. And it's just, it's really contentious argument from beginning to end on the DVD between Soderbergh and Lim Dobbs about the liberty Soderbergh took with Dobbs' script. So obviously the guys had some tension between them back when they made that and after it. And more than a decade now since that movie came out, it's just interesting that they're working together again. So I'm interested in the collaboration.
Well, I mean, from what I've seen of this movie, I'm interested to see this woman sort of smash her way through the A-list of Hollywood. And, you know, I think it's Soderbergh's done some good work in the past with non-professional actors. And, I mean, that's what sort of intrigues me about this, you know, particularly, because usually I'd probably be skeptical and say, oh, we've got a martial arts fighter starring in this movie. But, you know, Soderbergh has experimented with that before. There was a movie from a few years back called Bubble that he made that was completely, the entire cast was non-actors. And it was a fascinating movie. You know, it was really interesting to see what he did with that group of people and what he was able to get out of them. So, I don't know if this is the same style of movie as Bubble, but I think Soderbergh has proven that he can get an interesting performance out of somebody with no acting experience.
Yeah, and I think if you go back just a couple of years ago to his movie The Girlfriend Experience, and the star of the movie was this porn actress who I was completely unfamiliar with going into that movie, I might add.
Good for you, sir.
Yeah, and
nice job acquitting yourself, Ben.
So, I mean, this is somebody who'd never been in, quote-unquote, a real movie, and he was able to get... Well, he was able to get at least an interesting performance. I know a lot of people wouldn't call that a great performance because obviously she's an amateur, but he definitely got something out of her. And it was, to me, one of the better movies of that year.
All right. Well, and of course, because three times just wasn't enough, we get the fourth installment of the Underworld series, Underworld Awakening. Tell me, Matt, who is this movie for?
Well, I think you... it's important that you mention, by the way, that this movie is actually in 3D IMAX.
Oh, good.
As well. So, you know, I don't know anybody who's a fan of the Underworld series. I'm sure, I mean, I say that, and I wouldn't be surprised if we get some comments on AL.com from some dedicated...
Nobody's going to listen to
Underworld
this.
...Underworld fans. I don't know. But, I mean, look, Kate Beckinsale, for whatever reason... committed herself to this awful schlocky franchise a while ago, probably before she was a respected actress.
No, I think she said something about opting into this one.
Yeah, well, she wasn't in the third one, so so it makes sense. But I don't know. I mean, this is one of those franchises that doesn't seem to want to die, even though you don't.
Isn't it about like the undead? High fives all around.
Hey,
hey yo.
But you know, none of us know anybody who likes or watches these movies, and yet. You know, they seem to make enough money that, the studio wants to keep making them.
Well, I think it's a case of somebody, where are we going to see tonight? Oh, let's go see that Kate Beckinsale movie.
Where she's,
I think that's who sees
where she
it.
Kills werewolves.
I'm just saying, I think that's who, that's the caliber of moviegoer who will see this, is the people who go like,
The cold caller.
Kate Beckinsale's got a new movie out, let's go see that one.
Do enough people know who Kate Beckinsale is to say,
that's a good point, Ben.
Say, let's go see the new Kate Beckinsale movie?
Can she open a movie? Yeah.
Well, I think Underworld has kind of established itself as a brand, and I think that people, you know, are at a point now where they can say, oh, that really attractive brunette girl is in the Underworld movies. Maybe she's back again.
Like I said, I think we all agree this is not something that, you know, movie nerds like us are going to be interested in.
Well, I think the last thing we need to discuss is the fact that finally, the artist is here in Birmingham. It's going to be at the Vestavia Rave and the Carmike Summit Theater, I believe, opening this weekend. And this is the perfect film for people who are annoyed with all the talking and color that's in motion pictures these days. You got that? This
right out the window.
Yep. So this has been probably one of the most universally praised movies in recent times that I can think of, and it's all over the award shows, so... You guys, is it going to live up to the hype? I'm really excited about it.
Ben, you go ahead.
Okay. I really hope it lives up to the hype. This movie is really fighting an uphill battle when it comes to my expectations for it, and I'm doing my best. I'm really trying not to have such a head of steam going into this just based on the... juggernaut it has become during this award season, just cleaning up. And when it just really frustrates me, it's totally me, it's not the artist, because I'm sure it's a delightful movie. All I've heard is that it's great, obviously. But when a movie like this wins so many awards leading up to the Oscar season and is essentially declared the front runner to win the Best Picture Oscar, and I haven't seen it yet, it's frustrating to me because I want to be in on that conversation. And like you said, finally, thankfully, this movie is finally going to be in Birmingham, in a place where we can finally see it and be in on that conversation. So I'm going to try and check that attitude at the door when I finally get to see this thing, and just hopefully we'll enjoy it as much as everybody else. And if I don't, then I'll try and make that argument too.
Yeah, you do check it at the door, son. Jeez. Although I do, I can appreciate, like, I'm sure... going to, like, you know, if you're at a festival and you see this movie, you're surprised and delighted. And we're not going to get to have that element of surprise because it's been so shoved down our throat that this is the most delightful movie you'll ever see. I fully intend to enjoy the crap out of it, though. That being said,
well, not to jump on Ben's negativity bandwagon on this movie, but my skepticism about this movie comes from the fact that it's a silent black and white movie made in 2011, and my first thought is to go, okay, it's a gimmick, there's a part of me that says, is the reason everybody loves this so much and hypes this movie so much just because someone bothered to make a silent movie? I mean, is that element of it alone enough?
You know,
the novelty of it, is that what's driving all of the hype? Or, I mean, is it, I mean, I would love for it to be a great movie and, you know, it seems pretty universally loved. But that's sort of that's where some of my skepticism comes from, is I see the gimmick.
Yeah, but you know what? How many, you know, indie festival films have gone like, well, get them with the gimmick, and then they suck. Like, I don't think people would love it if it was just a gimmick, because, you know, people do gimmicky things, and they're terrible. And so I think, yes, maybe that's the hook, that's how they get you in, but I don't think it would have still been, you know, being this praised if there wasn't something more to it just than that it's black and white and silent.
I mean, a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, especially for a silent film to speak to audiences, it has to be really well acted. Like, you know, the 2011, now 2012 audience is not going to respond to something unless, you know, it really blows them out of the water, because everybody is super cool and, like, ready to be like,
Well, think about it, though. I mean, if Underworld Awakening was in black and white and silent, I don't think that it would be in the best picture conversation.
Good point,
so,
man.
Isn't it a little heartening that two of the movies that are really being discussed in this awards season are movies that are, you know, in praise of cinema itself, it seems. They're kind of love letters to cinema. You've got Hugo and this one that are both hearkening to a simpler time in films. Again, I think in our podcast, if I'm going to cross-promote here in Cinematrony, I'm always
harping
about...
Oh, we're totally cross-promoting this thing, yeah.
I'm always talking about, like, oh, I just like, you know, films about nice people being nice and doing nice things, and I feel like this maybe is going to fall in that realm. And, you know, movies used to be made like that. Like, it used to be, you know, the demons were without. It wasn't all about, like, tortured people. And I think that's kind of... The gist of this is, I think it's, you know, sort of a Singing in the Rain scenario that, you know, the talkies are coming out and this is somebody who's not being able to transition. But again, it's not because he's a bad man and he's struggling with demons. I think the idea is, you know, oh no, times are changing and I'm this person of a simpler time and era.
This ain't shame.
Yeah, it's not.
Well, I think that people will find some parallels, you know, in today's technological culture anyway, because I mean it's about a medium that is evolving in the face of new technology, and I think that there are lots of different mediums that are having to deal with that, so it'll speak to people. But the problem this movie has going into the award season, or that it might have when it comes to winning Best Picture, is that it hasn't reached a wide audience at all. This movie isn't really making money even in limited release. In You know, I hate to say it, but box office does play a role in Best Picture voting. I mean, these folks who are voting actually have to see the movie, and they get screeners and everything. But when something is way more accessible, like, say, War Horse or even Hugo or The Descendants, that might give it a slight edge. So the Weinstein Company, with this push this weekend to make it a wide release, it's really banking on the idea that people are going to pay money to see a French black and white silent film. So,
well, it doesn't matter that it's French. Hello. It's silent.
Well, in Alabama, it might.
Well, you know what? I think I am putting my faith in the people of Birmingham, and I think that it's in two theaters, and I think if we go this weekend, they're going to be full theaters. Because Matt and I were pleasantly surprised when we went and saw The Descendants last weekend that it was in the smallest theater at the Rave, but it was, like, hard to find a seat.
Sure.
And it was Saturday afternoon. Like, it was pretty full. I think you know, the Birmingham and sort of, you know, greater Alabama audience is getting a little more savvy. And, you know, I think the film community is starting to speak up a little bit with their ticket buying.
Yeah, I agree.
Which, just real quick, also wanted to plug, the Alabama Theater has started in this new year the Thursday Club Cinema, where they're showing beloved films on Thursday evenings. And this Thursday, they're going to be showing the Wes Anderson film Rushmore. In my humble opinion, probably my favorite of his films. That is this Thursday, January 26th at 8 p.m. And I think that I'm going to go ahead and assume that all three of us would recommend that.
Yes, highly.
And yeah. The Alabama Theater has the best popcorn in town. I'm going to say it. I love their popcorn. So go and check out Rushmore.
Yeah, people should get behind that. And honestly, it's in my top 10 of all time. It's one of my favorite movies ever, let alone my favorite Wes Anderson movie. I actually saw that movie in theaters in 1998 at the Fox 12 in Tuscaloosa. And while we're plugging local theaters showing great movies, the Bama Art House in Tuscaloosa kicked off its winter film series in 2012 a couple of weeks ago with Melancholia, or last week with the Lars von Trier movie, a really happy joint there to kick it off, and followed it up with another really delightful romp, Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
Oh, my gosh.
This week, and next week, keeping it going, Bellflower is actually going to play a movie that not a lot of people have heard of, but was really buzzworthy on the indie circuit, and coming up,
it's like a post-apocalyptic movie, right?
Did they come with the free news?
It's a movie sort of anticipating the apocalypse,
right.
I guess. So, yeah, it kind of touches upon that. But it's another really solid series. Yeah, it might be kind of dour in terms of the films they've selected, but they're movies that are definitely being talked about right now and were as 2011 sort of wound down.
And how is the popcorn?
I actually haven't had a popcorn there.
Then what good are you to us, Ben? Goodbye. Report back, please. A popcorn report.
They do have an excellent wine selection at the Bama Theater.
Ooh, classy.
Yeah.
I don't care. Who drinks wine when you're watching a movie? That is irrelevant, Matt, to this conversation. All right, let's wrap things up with your DVD picks, gentlemen.
I am going to recommend this week The Ides of March, which is out. It came out this past Tuesday on DVD and Blu-ray. I'm not sure if you're going to see it showing up in on Oscar night this year. It seems like the momentum's kind of faded, but there's some great performances. Particularly Paul Giamatti and Philip Seymour Hoffman as the sort of campaign managers in this movie. But I really enjoyed this movie. I still think it's one of the more underrated movies of 2011. And I think it's a really slick, smart screenplay, and highly recommend it.
Ben?
Well, since you took Ides of March, and that seems to be the only decent movie that was released on DVD this week, I guess I'm stuck with Bucky Larson,
right.
which is also available now on DVD. But no, I mean, since there's not really much to recommend in the way of things that are new that are coming out, I'll tell you some things that I'm planning to watch this week. And one of them, I'm hopefully going to start the show Dexter from episode 1 of season 1. I rented that out from my local public library, so I look forward to checking that out. And I'm looking at the newly added to Netflix Instant Watch, so you can watch it streaming on your computer or on your TV. That Comedy Central show Workaholics is now available on Netflix Instant, and I hear really great things about it. I haven't seen it yet.
I have,
but
too.
I hear great things.
Yeah, Francesca's brother is a big fan and has been trying to get me to watch it for weeks now, so maybe I'll check that out.
And he was right about Always Sunny, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Well done, Chris. I'm just looking at the screen that Matt has pulled up here, and I'm going to recommend that you have a double hit of Robin Williams. He's going to make you laugh and cry, and the Dead Poets Society and Good Morning Vietnam, both released on Blu-ray this past Tuesday, so get out your hankies for both tears of laughter and sadness.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. I think that's all. Ben, why don't you tell us how people can hear more and listen to your Aspect Radio. It's called Aspect Ratio, which would have been dumb of me.
No, yeah, I host a movie podcast with my friend and colleague Corey Kraft, who is actually a Tuscaloosa News employee. It's called Aspect Radio. You can catch it at aspectradio.net, and you can read my stuff on AOL.com.
Boom. And Matt, why don't you go ahead and plug your junk?
Whoa. Well,
let's calm down there, Fassbender.
Yeah.
I didn't mean plug your junk.
Well, obviously, if you're if you're into sports, you can find some of my stuff on AL.com in the sports section. But also, Francesca and I here host a semi-regular movie review podcast called Cinematrimony that you can find either on filmnerds.com, or we'll probably post some links to it here in the post on AL.com as well. But we've got quite a few recent episodes. You can hear us talk about Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. You can hear us talk about Young Adult. And most recently, we did a podcast on The Descendants. So if you want to hear Francesca and I discuss those movies in depth, you should listen to our Cinematrimony podcast.
Well, let's not say in depth. Don't give the people the wrong idea.
Off the top of our heads. How about
that? Yes, indeed. All right, then. Good job, gang. See you next week for more of AL.com's Clicks Fix.
Close enough.